Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7, coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington on Friday, September 5, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyairam.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Among our top stories this evening:
an American lobbyist files papers in court seeking to force President Robert Mugabe to testify in a criminal case he's facing for illegally lobbying Washington to remove targeted sanctions imposed on Mr. Mugabe and members of his inner circle.
They're just trying to get publicity around the matter. Because in terms of the U.S. law, I think that the crime that he's charged with is a crime that does not require President Mugabe in any way to be involved.
A Chiredzi magistrate frees one of the Chingwizi internally displaced persons from custody and relaxes punitive reporting conditions.
So the court today, the lawyers, we actually made an application for the relaxation of the bail condition, mainly focusing on the issue of the clients walking a long distance in the triangle, 40 to 45 kilometers.
And the Binga Rural District Council today passed a resolution rejecting the teaching of the Ndebele language in Tonga-speaking areas.
A senior official in the Attorney General's office has dismissed an attempt by a Chicago lobbyist to force President Robert Mugabe to testify in a criminal case he is facing for illegally lobbying Washington to remove targeted sanctions imposed on Mr. Mugabe and members of his inner circle as a cheap publicity stunt. The United States government imposed the sanctions on President Robert Mugabe in 2003, accusing his government of gross human rights abuses, among other issues. But Harare argues that sanctions were imposed as punishment for its land redistribution program. Businessman Gregory Turner wants a Chicago federal judge to force Mr. Mugabe to give videotaped evidence in his defense when the president attends the United Nations General Assembly meeting in New York later this month. Turner's lawyer argues Mr. Mugabe is central to the case. Turner's lawyers in a court filing yesterday argued that their client won't have a fair trial unless U.S. District Judge Elaine Barklow orders Mr. Mugabe to give a deposition when he visits New York.
Turner's alleged accomplice, Chicago activist and restorer Prince Asiel Ben Israel, was last month sentenced to 7 months in prison for violating U.S. law by lobbying on behalf of President Mugabe and his administration, which is under U.S. economic sanctions. Turner and Ben Israel, who is 73, were promised U.S. $3.4 million by Harare and admitted receiving a down payment of U.S. $90,000 in 2008 at the height of Zimbabwe's economic crisis. Efforts to get a comment from Turner's lawyer Michael Leonard and Mr. Mugabe's spokesman George Charamba were futile. But University of Zimbabwe law professor and leader of the opposition National Constitutional Assembly, Lavmo Madugu, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that international law protects Mr. Mugabe from testifying in such cases.
I think that is just not useful. I think they are just trying to get publicity around the matter. Because in terms of the U.S. law, I think that the crime that he's charged with is a crime that does not require President Mugabe in any way to be involved. I mean, I think it's an illegal campaign or whatever under American law. So it would not be evidence from President Mugabe would not help his case. But also, secondly, and more importantly, whenever heads of state visit the United States on United Nations business, they are not regarded as being in the United States for that purpose. The United States is just, for purpose of the United Nations, acting as a neutral territory. So someone can be in the United States for UN purposes and may not be regarded as being in the United States. So United States law will not apply to a visiting head of state.
How about their argument that if the court is interested in a fair trial, it is to allow Mr. Mugabe to give that video taped testimony?
But they have to justify, they have to give reasons what Mugabe's testimony will do to their case. So you cannot just say that it will lead to an unfair trial if Mugabe does not testify. You must be very specific that you would want President Mugabe to give evidence on this element. And if this element is not given, if that evidence on the element is not given, there will be no fair trial. So as it stands from what you are saying, those are just bold statements which have no value unless they are clearly given with justification.
That was University of Zimbabwe law professor and the leader of the opposition National Constitutional Assembly, Love Momaduku, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Chiredzi magistrate Tayengwa Chibanda today freed Sophia Tagwirei, one of the Chingwizi internally displaced persons who had been in detention for more than 1 month after being charged with committing public violence. Tagwirei was freed on bail after the state prosecutor sanctioned and consented to the release of the 39-year-old villager after conceding that she was not being linked to the commission of the offense of committing public violence. Magistrate Chibanda ordered Tagwirei to pay $30 bail, to report to police once a fortnight at the nearest police station, continue residing at a given residential address, not interfere with state witnesses, and to inform the officer in charge of the nearest police post of her intention to leave Mashingo Province. Blessing Zulu spoke with Kennedy Masie of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, who represented Tagwirei, the 26th Chingwizi villager to be freed after Magistrate Chibanda first granted bail to other villagers who were arrested on August 3, 2014 on charges of public violence.
Okay, yes, the court today, the lawyers, we actually made an application for the relaxation of the bail condition, mainly focusing on the issue of the clients walking a long distance in the triangle, 40 to 45 kilometers. So upon the application, the court then actually granted the application and gave a ruling to the effect that they were supposed to go and report at the nearest police post in the vicinity of the villages. And the court also then went further to then make a ruling that they were supposed to then report in a fortnight instead of reporting weekly as per the main order.
When is the trial going to commence?
Oh, the trial is going to commence on the 21st to 20th of October. And hopefully then we can then deal with the issues relating to the trial, because we have been given all the state papers and we are ready to go.
Kennedy Masie of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights on the line from Chiredzi with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu.
The Binga Rural District Council today passed a measure rejecting the teaching of the Ndebele language in Tonga-speaking areas. The resolution that is sure to stir controversy says only Tonga and English should be taught in the district. The council argues that the teaching of Ndebele in Binga amounts to tribal domination. Zimbabwe's new constitution recognizes all languages and says each language should be included in school curricula where it is spoken. The Tonga language is now being taught at both primary and secondary level. Studio 7 reporter Ntungamili Nkomo reached Binga council leader Dube Mukombwe.
In education system, we see that our Tonga kids, they are disadvantaged. They are being swallowed slowly but sure with other neighboring tribes like Ndebele in the Pacific. Because you find that our kids from 1980 or whatever, 1970s, they lived during Smith regime. The Tonga people were given a good chance to learn their own language. Of which now, if you can check that, you find that the Tonga kids, they are made to learn Ndebele, which is not their tribe. Of which the council now today made a resolution to say a Tonga child can eat, can they they learn their mother language at English, which is done with other tribes countrywide.
So your beef here is with the Ndebele language?
It's not against Ndebele, but when we say against Ndebele, it would now depend how they take it. But for us, I think as Tonga people, we've learned more for their language as Tonga people. While the Ndebele tribe is not learning our language. What if you can say we are in Mati North, which is Matebele North province, but in Lupane they don't learn Tonga, in Icholocho they don't learn Tonga, in Nkai they don't learn Tonga, in Wange they don't learn Tonga, but we will learn in Ndebele. So why should we learn other people's language when they cannot learn ours?
Dube Mukombwe is the Binga Rural District Chairman. He was speaking with the reporter Ntungamili Nkomo from Binga. Education Minister.
The Railway Artisans Union, one of the three unions representing National Railways of Zimbabwe employees, says its members will tomorrow gather in Harare, Bulawayo, Mutare and Gweru to demonstrate over their outstanding salaries. Railway Artisans Union Secretary General Stokozile Lesuela says the aim of their demonstrations to be held simultaneously is to conscientize the nation about their plight. The NRZ workers have gone for 10 months without pay. The Parastatal reportedly owes its workers more than $50 million in salary arrears and is planning to retrench about 6,000 employees to cut costs. Reporter Joonga Kandemiri spoke with Suela earlier on.
We've lined up demonstrations in four cities, in Bulawayo, Gweru, Harare and Mutare. And NRZ workers are demonstrating because they are 10 months in arrears in terms of salaries. So they are saying they want their salaries now. That's what we're saying.
How effective are these demonstrations, considering that they are coming on a weekend?
It's not like we are on strike, that we want to stop working. But we want the world to know what the railways management is doing. It's not about stopping work. It's about letting the world know what is happening. So we think they are very effective. If we do it during the week, during railway time, they may victimize workers to say they used the railway time to do their demonstrations. That's why we've decided to do it on a weekend when people are not at work. Tomorrow we'll be marching from one place to the other. So we think they are going to be effective.
Last time you had the issues with the police over clearance, did you get the permission to demonstrate?
Remember last time we had issues and we took the issues to court and we were given a court order to say the police are not supposed to interfere with our demonstrations according to the new Zimbabwe constitution. So we used that order to write to the police and we are happy to say they've granted us, they've said we can go ahead.
That was a Railway Artisans Union Secretary General Sitokozile Lesuela on the line from Bulawayo with reporter Joonga Kandemiri.
Industry and Commerce Deputy Minister Mike Bima says there is a public health concern about the influx of used clothes from other countries that he says could fuel the spread of the dreaded Ebola virus. Bima was responding to questions in the Senate on what the government is doing to promote the growth of the textile industry, currently facing stiff competition from the cheaper used apparel. Bima said the used clothes pass unchecked through the country's borders, raising fears about the potential risk of the deadly virus that has killed more than 2,000 people, mainly in West Africa. However, a medical expert, Dr. Trevor Moyo, told Studio 7 chances of one getting infected with Ebola from the clothes are remote, but he advises people to first wash used clothes with detergents before using them.
These are just mere speculative type of issues because investigations in countries where there is Ebola, it is through contact of fluids mainly and, of course, airborne in terms of the environment within. But the question of getting it from used clothes is so speculative and non-scientific based rather.
So are we saying here even if someone was to put on unwashed used clothes, nothing would happen?
Chances are, as I'm saying, they are speculative type of chances because, as you are aware, mainly it is do with the fluid. That is the scientific confirmation in terms of contact of a fluid-based type of a virus.
That was Dr. Trevor Moyo, a medical expert. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency. Coming up,
pensioners struggle to make ends meet.
But first, a look at regional and international news.
The International Criminal Court's chief prosecutor has asked judges to adjourn the trial of Kenya's president indefinitely due to a lack of cooperation from the Kenyan government.
Mozambique's president and opposition leader have ratified a peace deal ending 2 years of low-level conflict that raised fears that the country would return to civil war. President Armando Guebuza and opposition chief Afonso Tlakama affixed their signatures to the deal today at a ceremony in the capital witnessed by diplomats and journalists.
And a third U.S. healthcare worker is returning home after contracting the Ebola virus while working in West Africa. Dr. Rick Sakra was working in Liberia. He's scheduled to arrive in the Midwestern state of Nebraska today.
The Zimbabwe Construction and Allied Trades Workers Union says more than 9,000 retrenched workers from the construction industry are failing to access their pension funds, as most companies in the sector have not been remitting deductions to the Construction Industry Pension Fund. Ivan Chifera has details from Harare.
Union Secretary General Muchapiwa Nicholas Mazarura told Studio 7 it is said that retrenchees are failing to access their pensions when construction companies have been deducting contributions from workers every month but apparently not remitting them to their pension fund. He said most companies have not been remitting deducted monies to the pension fund since dollarization in 2009, adding this is affecting thousands of workers being retrenched monthly.
We've done our research. Remember, when we got this report that the employers are not paying, the workers are our members. We received almost 9,000 plus workers who are not accessing their pension fund. So to me, when we done our calculations in terms of monetary terms, it's almost $3,900,000 US dollars owed by these companies.
Mazarura said even big construction companies, which sit in the country's National Employment Council, a board that negotiates conditions of service in the industry, are defaulting. As a result, he said, companies such as Mutual Construction and Magnet Construction, owned by businessman Philip Chiangwa, have been barred from the Employment Council. Mazarura says the union now wants Public Service and Labor Minister Nicholas Goche to intervene and ensure the companies pay their dues to the pension fund.
The first thing to do is to notify the minister as we done it. And if the minister delay to take action, then we have no option but to call our members to tune down. As long as we follow the right procedure in terms of Labor Act, in terms of our adjustment, then we say sit down until these employers complied with the required.
But Construction Industry Federation of Zimbabwe President Gift Mpofu said he was not aware of the Construction Workers Union grievances, adding he could not comment for an organization he does not belong to. Mazarura said if the minister does not resolve the problem, the union would call for a strike. A former worker in the construction industry, who is yet to get his pension, Tedious Kurune, told Studio 7 there was no reason for the pension fund not to pay him as he had contributed for years. He adds he knows the fund had invested his money in buildings and other properties. Pension funds invest workers' funds in various forms. Some build shopping malls and office blocks to make profit and in the process raise funds to pay workers upon retrenchment or retirement. On Wednesday, National Social Security Authority Compliance Manager James Chiwera told a labor workshop in Mutare that only 50% of the companies currently operating in the country are paying the compulsory employee contributions to the pension fund as the economy continues to struggle. A parliamentary investigation into NASA operations revealed contributions were not being properly managed and that NASA senior workers and managers were borrowing money from the fund at very low rates while pensioners were getting peanuts monthly, making their lives miserable. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
VOA's Gibbs Dube digs deep into the pension crisis in Zimbabwe to see how pensioners are surviving.
Former flamboyant Lever Brothers salesman Collier Kumbochuma, 71, is looking for work 16 years after he left formal employment. Kumbochuma, who now lives in his remote rural home in Shabane, Midlands Province, has not yet benefited from any pension scheme he contributed to. He is currently looking for work, though he fears that no one will ever employ him.
Nobody is prepared to employ a walking grave like me without teeth or anything. The only thing I could do in my life was to be a salesman. And now at my age, no one is prepared to employ me.
Kumbachuma has just been told by the state-run National Social Security Authority, or NASA, that he is eligible for a pension for the 7 years he worked in the formal sector as he used to change jobs at will.
It would be a lump sum. How much it would be, they do not state. But it means the minimum they pay out the months and the years, as these 7 years I am talking about. Now, you are looking at maybe about 3,000 to 4,000, and that will be the total. I won't claim anything from NASA after that.
Most pension schemes in Zimbabwe collapsed when the Zimbabwe dollar weakened significantly due to hyperinflation, which, according to the International Monetary Fund, reached 500% in 2008. Some pensioners are currently earning as little as $20 a month, while others are failing to access their pensions. Labor expert Davis Ndumiso Sibanda says this has forced senior citizens to seek employment.
We are beginning to see even workers now scrutinizing their contracts to say, but employer, you had no retirement age. You never said I would go at 60, but so-and-so left at 70. Why can't I go at 70? It's all out of desperation to keep jobs.
Sibanda says the situation is worsened by current company closures and firms that fail to remit pensions as prescribed by the laws of Zimbabwe.
What has actually happened is that the money has been deducted from workers. It has not actually been remitted to pension funds. And when the worker finishes work at retirement, he has an expectation of getting a pension. He is told that your company has not been remitting anything, and as a result, he gets nothing or very likely to sustain him.
A board member of the National Railways of Zimbabwe Contributory Pension Fund, Abednego Moyo, agrees, noting that the majority of former railway employees who retired between 2007 and 2008 are looking for work due to unsustainable pensions. They are getting as little as $32 a month, while early retirees and those who left after dollarization take home between $400 and $500 a month.
It is very, very dangerous because at that age, you don't have the normal concentration that you would have had at a younger age. But you then can't blame that person. It's actually suicidal. And then they just take the suicidal part of it because they'll be wanting to leave.
Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions President George Nkiwane echoes the same sentiments.
Imagine someone who's over 70, over 65, going back to work. The majority of them are into the security sector. Do you think that person can provide an essential service, or is that a witness? Because even people come in there to the premise that you'll be guarding, you're not going to be able to do anything because the person is old now. But because you cannot make ends meet, that person is forced to look for employment.
He says these people need help from the Department of Social Welfare.
The Ministry of the Service can provide those safety nets for all people. Then they can be cushioned. Because without that, I don't see any solution to their plight, because independent pension funds cannot do anything.
But for some retirees, there is a happy ending. A case in point is that of Lulu Mackenzie, a former temporary Rhodesian government employee, went back to work at 80, but has since stopped working.
I worked for the government for 35 years, and then I worked for a farmer for 30 years, and I worked for a firm in town for 5 years, and I used to coach tennis for 40 years. I am now 84 years old. I worked until I was 82.
She says her last employer is paying her rent at an upmarket lodge in Masungo Town.
The lady I worked for pays my rent here at the lodge. About $300-$400 a month. That's what you pay for your little cottages.
For retirees getting Miaka pensions or nothing at all, their situation is worsened by piling health issues as they can't cope with huge medical bills. Policy analyst and researcher Butler Tambo of the Policy Research Institute of Zimbabwe says corruption, the collapse of the Zimbabwe dollar, and poor investment decisions devastated pension schemes.
There has been lots of corruption at NASA. That's one. Two, NASA has made a lot of bad investment decisions. For instance, NASA lost a lot of money when it invested in Interfin. It invested with Renaissance. So all those millions that were lost because of those deals are money that could have gone into assisting pensioners get a reasonable amount.
NASA and the National Railways of Zimbabwe have acknowledged that they are facing serious challenges in administering pension funds, with NASA accusing some companies of failing to remit the necessary funds for workers. Executives of both entities were not readily available for comment. Reporting for VOA, this is Gibbs Dube in Washington, D.C.
This is Tatenda Gumbo, host of the Youth Forum. Join me this weekend as I feature up-and-coming hip-hop artist OWE Skyrider.
Yo, guys, tune in for the Youth Forum on Sunday with Tatenda Gumbo and OWE Skyrider, the realest baddest grandman in Azim.
Make sure you tune in this Sunday on Studio 7.
Nearly 11,000 people who were tested for HIV since last year have failed to return to collect their results, according to the National AIDS Council. The statistics, which were released by the NAC at the just-ended Association of Health Funders in Zimbabwe conference in Victoria Falls, show that although Zimbabwe has lowered its infection rate and raised the number of people receiving antiretroviral therapy, some Zimbabweans still fear stigmatization if diagnosed HIV positive. NAC officials say the figure is of concern and they are working to make sure all Zimbabweans know their status and receive the care they need if found positive. About 800,000 people are on antiretroviral therapy and $100 million is spent every year to provide the ARVs. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Women AIDS Support Network Director Mary Sandasi, who explains that organizations in the field are working to urge people to collect their results when they go for tests.
As Women and AIDS Support Network, what we do is we work with women and girls, and we very much encourage them to know their status so that they can get early treatment. Because when people don't know their status, they used to getting into behaviors that would actually make it worse for them.
What about community work? Does that assist in making sure that people understand that it's better to know your status than not know?
I think what we need to do is to actually extensively give that education to people so that they value the test that take. Because at times people don't go because of fear. And also that fear is also coupled with the stigma. They fear of knowing their status and also the fear of getting stigmatized.
From your work on the ground, are most people willing to come back and get their results to find out whether or not they are HIV negative or HIV positive?
I think what stops most of them is if they go there when they're not feeling well, the HIV test is done. Then when they feel better, they don't want to get their results.
Women and AIDS Support Network Director Mary Sandasi on the line with Tatenda Gumbo from Harare.
Now to recap today's top stories.
Chris, one of our top stories today was an American lobbyist who filed papers in court seeking to force President Robert Mugabe to testify in a criminal case he is facing for illegally lobbying Washington to remove targeted sanctions imposed on Mr. Mugabe and members of his inner circle.
A Chiredzi magistrate frees one of the Chingwizi internally displaced persons from custody and relaxes punitive reporting conditions.
Unfortunately, time is not on our side. That's our broadcast this evening. But listeners, please remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when Blessing and Gibbs will discuss with you and the experts about the pension problem in Zimbabwe.
That's all for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night. And happy birthday to Blessing Zulu.